Welcome to the Working Within podcast, a podcast dedicated to your spiritual growth, well-being, and awareness. I'm Charlene, your favorite wellness podcaster, Scorpio, and Gemini. Keep listening if you're looking for an extra supplement to help you reflect on your relationship with yourself and others, or keep you inspired and fearless about the possibilities for your own life. This season, you can look forward to topics like self-esteem, body consciousness, astrology in daily life, empowerment, law of attraction, and so much more. All with the goal of keeping you inspired and in the know. For more information, you can always connect with us at the Working Within Instagram or our website, workingwithin.net, to see our service offerings. Thank you all for your reviews, likes, and shares. And if you'd like to become a monthly supporter, you can click the link in our episode description. We look forward to building a community with you. Hello, my favorite listeners. Welcome back to another week on the Working Within podcast season 2. It's a great time to share space with you all again via these headphones or the speaker that you're listening to us from. This week, we are really excited to talk about a little bit of a different subject for Working Within, at least, which will be more about one, womanhood in politics, but also social change and passive influence from a dear friend of mine, Anna Paula. She is going to talk with us about how her interest in politics started, some of the challenges she's faced along the way to think about her political career, and honestly, a lot about the issues and changes in the world that she's really passionate about and interested in seeing. And so almost think visionary, you know? I hope that this conversation, first, it doesn't need much by way of introduction, but more, I just want you all to think about and reflect on what energizes you this much, because I'm sure you'll hear many times in the conversation, and I remember speaking with Anna Paula, is that she has these really passionate almost speeches that she gives in this episode. And I'm really grateful that she did that, right? Because again, we're on a podcast, but not only because we're speaking on a podcast, but because it is very clear when something energizes you the way politics do to Anna Paula. And it is very clear when there is not something that energizes you that way. So subject or a hobby or an activity that really gets you fired up, inspired, and ready to act in the way Anna Paula talks about her experiences and interests in this space. And so while you're listening, I really encourage you to think about what that could look like for you. And there isn't one right answer to say. I don't think anyone on this earth can only have one passion. But I know often that we are not even encouraged to find one. And so what is that for you? Beside the even the topic that we focus on being politics, social change in this episode. And then secondly, I hope that, again, Anna Paula is so inspiring. I hope that this just inspires you all to be more hopeful, visionary, futuristic, because a lot of what Anna Paula explains is her visions for what the world can look like, what we can all internalize and share with the world to make it a better place. And I don't mean that like in a kumbaya way. I don't mean it in a like superficial way. I truly mean like it is up to us to carry forward the legacies, attitudes, beliefs that we want to see in the world. And I think Anna Paula does an even better job of actually articulating how that works and has a really great understanding of just how we all have to work together, you know, to the extent that we don't want to change things, it requires all of us. So anyway, she's super awesome. Y'all will get to know her via this episode. I hope that while you're listening to this episode, you're like moving because I think this episode, her energy, it's charged, it's electric, and it's super passionate. And again, just so grateful that she was able to show us her stuff on this episode. And so let me stop talking about it. Let's get into it. I'm so excited to have AP Anna Paula on the chat with us today for this episode. I met Anna Paula through a mutual friend, Sophia Miranda Fred, who was also on the podcast And I'm very excited to have met AP this way, because she is going to freaking drop the mic on us about our topic today, which has to do with influence, politics, and personal power. But, you know, I will let her do the duty of introducing herself. And so everyone say welcome AP or Anna Paula to the mic.
Hi, Charlie's people. Charlie, thank you so much for having me. We're both, if you can't see the video, we're both kind of geeking right now in a very good way.
Yes.
But hi, everybody. My name is AP. My pronouns are she, her, ella. And at Charlie's request and at my own chagrin, I'm going to say that my big three are a sun in Capricorn, a moon in Scorpio, and then my rising in Sag. And that's just a lot. There's a lot going on. That's a lot of a lot.
But it's great.
I carry her with pride. And I'm very happy and honored today to be here with Charlie, talking about influence and politics and what I've seen can potentially be women's roles in it. And I'm just going to have a really good conversation with my good friend, Charlie.
Oh, buddy. Yeah, we're going to have a great conversation. And I suppose, yeah, AP hit on the nail. We're going to talk about women feeling like they can influence the world because it's possible. And I've seen this, especially through just the light touch engagement I've had with AP so far and the kind of stuff she does that I hope she'll tell you all about. And that Scorpio moon, like, is so real because, listeners, I also have that Scorpio moon. And, you know, just...
I gag a little bit. It's once I figured out what it all meant, I was like, dang, the stars really be out here.
It was dictating. It's so dramatic, you know?
Like, it's just so dramatic. And the thing is, like, earth signs are already so dramatic because I think they're the only ones that can do anything right. So you couple that with a Scorpio moon, which is like, a Scorpio is like very dramatic. And so now it's like the triple dramatic. And then you have the Sag rising, which is quadruple dramatic. So yeah. It can be a lot, as everyone can probably hear. But it's a good thing. It's a good a lot.
Exactly. There's nothing wrong with it. So, yeah, that's why, literally, you're here to be a lot on the show. Talk your stuff. Okay. Well, look, we're going to get to the personal power, but we're just going to chat. You know how things go on this show, listeners. And the first question I have for you, AP, is can we set the stage for the listeners and let them know how we met? I believe everything happens when it should, how it should.
Yes, I am a huge believer in how things should happen for a reason. When they happen, you should never force things. If it's meant to be, it'll be. All those good things. So, listeners, I met Charlie my junior year of college, which was her senior year of college. And I'm pretty sure I had met Charlie a little bit before at some point, but like very much in passing. But when I met her more in depth, I like didn't know I'm like trying to look Charlie in the eye. Should I sit at another table? Should I didn't know. Like, I came into this beautiful WashU campus. I think we were like in the business building. Mm-hmm. We were in the business building. I think you guys were hanging out with a bunch of your business. With your bunch of your business attorney brothers. And I walk in. I don't know what, I think I was wearing like some wacky thing, and I see Charlie at her desk, like typing and writing. And I was like, huh, I'm gonna promptly escort myself out of the campus and out of the building.
Oh my.
Because there was just so much power that Charlie held. And I also want you to know that I was saying that my crystal, the necklace, like it undid itself and it fell off. Because this crystal is supposed to be the crystal of self-confidence, and me recounting how absolutely in your existence I was just so humbled and baffled by your power that this fell off. So we're just gonna leave that there and let it simmer for a moment.
Oh my goodness. All right, AP. Look, I was frankly just a workaholic.
Truly, madly, deeply. Ooh. That was just me in a moment of my life where I do not identify. Thank you.
Literally a workaholic. So I don't want to like just leave what you said in the air. So thank you for your kind words.
Yes.
That was an interesting period of life.
Thank you for taking the compliment. For those of you who know, Charlie doesn't do that often. So when she does it, also pause.
God. Okay, I'm never having another Scorpio moon on the podcast ever. What in the world?
After this.
I literally cannot be on the podcast. But no. Thank you, AP. I really appreciate that. Yeah, we met because we were meant to connect, and I've always been super admirable of, or really, I guess I should say, I've always admired AP's voice and how she uses it. And we haven't had much 3D time together, but on social media, I have inklings of what AP is passionate about, especially as it has to do with influence and politics and women in politics. Like, that is her jam. And I find it especially admirable because I like politics and I like have a lot of space. So, but AP like has a really deep passion for this stuff. So anyway, I would just love for you to talk a little bit about where that started for you and where you kind of like found your political voice.
And it's just because this past week, I think it's definitely much more ingrained in my mind because it happened annually for this past week, but I am part of a program called Texas Blue Bonnet Girl State. Every single state has a girl state and a boy state program. So you can go to Delaware, you can go to Georgia, you can go to Hawaii, you can go anywhere. You're going to have an ALA-funded, dedicated girl state or boy state program. For those of my movie buffs up there, you probably saw the movie Boy State, produced by A24. If you want another podcast episode on another podcast that isn't The Beautiful Working Within, ask me about my opinions about Boy State. It's a lot. It's a lot of opinion about a lot, because that film definitely highlighted how men in our society, and not all men, right? Because we have our allies and we have those who are being constructive with their time and with their power. But you do have the select few who use their power and their influence to, how does one say it nicely, to mess around. And that's all I'll say about that. But so I am a passionate, avid member of Texas Blue Bonnet Girl State. And when I was a junior in high school, I was nominated to go. And it is a 1-week program that dedicates its time to teach young girls and young women about local government, how to write a bill, how the legislature works, how to run for offices, how to campaign. And before that, I had had the inkling of being interested in politics, which mm-hmm. now looking back at it, I'm a firm believer that, you know, we should always be mindful of the politics we pursue and the politics that we practice, because more likely than not, they're affecting those who do not have a voice, who have been disproportionately represented, who don't have, like, whose either groups or influences or lack thereof don't have the money to make the big changes. Mm-hmm. And those are all these inklings I got at Girl State, mm-hmm. was what it means to have that power. And especially myself as a white Latina who's cisgender, what does it mean to hold that space and hold that power? And how big is that responsibility? And very quickly I found out it's quite big.
Capricorn.
So time that week.
Sorry.
Listen, man, I'm telling you, even before I knew what it meant, I was like holding on to that power. But that week was like the first time that I truly felt what it meant to have that potential of, like, I can go to a city council meeting, and when I'm 18, I can vote, and I can go canvas, and I can go phone bank. And it's all these things that I have the privilege of doing also as a citizen, and that I don't feel threatened by doing it, again, because I am white. Mm-hmm. And that's a privilege I've carried for a very long time, ever since I was born. And especially the privilege of citizenship, I don't think people talk about it enough.
Yeah.
Because being a citizen, being born here, gives you a lot of rights that people that either were born outside of the United States, those who were brought and do not have citizenship, such as our Dreamers and our TPS recipients. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really easy for people to forget how big of a privilege that is. And so, you know, all these thoughts and this motivation that I brought back to Girl State the year afterwards, because somebody saw something in me that I still don't get. Mm-hmm. And I was asked to come back as a counselor. And that has been one of the biggest gifts to be able to go back and not only have this fire reignited in me every year of what it is to teach people about local government and teach young women what it means to use their voices, but it also reignites in me how much I believe that this is such an important thing to be teaching. I don't know where I would be without the rural room like this. And mm-hmm. right now we're actually working on making sure it's more accessible. and that recruiting is done from all over the state, because you know, you have people that are legacies, you have people from a lot of different communities. But right now we're working to ensure, with our DEI council, we're working to ensure that anyone who wants to come to Girl State can. And anyone who is nominated, has gone through the process, can do it. And so, you know, that's kind of where it began. And I've met some really wonderful people who are some of my greatest friends, and they're all doing really cool things. I have a friend at Stanford who just graduated from Stanford, and she's working at BCG. She's been working there for a year. I have another friend who's probably going to run for office pretty soon. I have another friend.
Why aren't you going to run for office?
I'm going to need another podcast to talk about that one. Hopefully sometime within the next 5 years.
I said, why aren't you running for office?
Oh, I didn't say when. Why am I not running for office? Well, first of all, age. For the position I want, which is at the congressional level, I cannot legally run and submit a petition to run and file until I'm 25, which I think is the wildest rule. I'm a huge, huge believer in the way that because there is an age minimum, there should be an age maximum. I do not think that you should be 80 years old and running for an elected office. The same way I don't believe that Supreme Court justices should be on the bench until they die. Love my girl RBG, rest in peace. But Homegirl was sticking it out by the end. Like, you know, by the end, she was hanging out on the bench. Like, even she knew, I think, at the end, which is a whole other issue in itself of holding this idea of democracy on one individual.
Yeah.
So that's a whole other thing. But, so age, quite frankly, I don't have as much experience as I would like to. And I've spent the last 4 years out of Texas. You know, I've gone back to visit. My parents lived there until they just moved. But it would be a disservice to myself and to those that I want to represent if I just go back to Texas the moment I turn 25 and say, okay, I'm ready to run. It doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. People do that. But especially as women, we are already scrutinized so much more when we run for office based on what we wear, how we sound, how we interact with others, how we cut our hair, what we have on our face, you know. And so those barriers are things that you have to take into consideration when running. But it doesn't mean it's not going to happen. Like, it's going to happen. And people are going to see it happen. And I already told people my intent to run when the time comes about. Because the most important thing to do is tell people. Because if you don't tell people, then who's going to vote for you? Keeping in mind everything, it's going to happen. And I'm promising that to Charlie on this podcast right now.
And the listeners. Listeners, vote for AP 2027, 26?
Listeners, move to Texas, vote for me. If you don't commit voter fraud, because then I'll get in trouble. But I didn't say that.
They're not going to do voter fraud.
Don't do it.
So, when you do run for office, AP, what type of world are you working towards seeing? What type of world do you want to exist beyond after you're done?
I know that the biggest thing for me is leading a world that's more empathetic, which sounds really dry. It sounds...
No. Empathy would solve a lot of problems.
This is true. Empathy would solve a lot of problems, and I think that's why it's at the forefront of a world that I would like to see. It's a world where we are kinder, we listen more, and I think those both tie into empathy and being empathetic people. I think especially this past year with COVID, we've seen a lot of growth in apathy, which is this lack or this interest in trying to connect with people emotionally, which is fair.
You know, in our generation's dating stuff, don't get me started.
Oh, ma'am. Yes. Like, okay, I can't say right? Because I have been in a committed long-term relationship for a moment, but from what I do remember dating online, it was not fun. People were apathetic. I was apathetic.
Same. Like, at myself too. Like, this is not a projection.
You know, it's truly easy, and especially this past year, with being working online, going to school online, you just don't care after a while. And I think the same can be applied to politics, is that you see the same thing over and over again. You see the promise, you see, this is what I'm going to do for you, this is why you should vote for me. People get into office and they don't do that.
True.
Or they do when they have acid. And so you develop a sort of apathy towards politics. People shouldn't do that because politics is personal.
Mm-hmm.
It affects every single person, no matter how you look at it. From most privileged to least privileged. Like, you have these moments where you begin to realize how important it is to be politically aware. You don't have to be super engaged, but you have to be aware about what's going on. Because more likely than not, the taxes going up are going to affect your paycheck. Mm-hmm. The school that's getting built on the corner, what does that mean for your zoning? Does that mean your city is going to get annexed? What does that mean for your water bill? What does that mean for your electricity? What does it mean for your income? And especially as women, women of color, women in general, mm-hmm. and also men who don't identify from people who are non-binary, what does that mean for your paycheck and how it's affected compared to a white male? You know, it's all these things that I think, unfortunately or fortunately, however you want to look at it, people who are not cis white men have to pay attention to those things more because they're affected negatively, more negatively than those men. But that is all to say that the biggest thing is to be empathetic. And I want to be in a world where people are empathetic and kind and are listening to listen and not to respond. That's what I want in this world. I had to reel it back for a moment.
Yeah, right?
I was trailing off. I was like, reel it back. I felt it. I was like, hey, P, baby, get some control back. Got the time.
What? All right. No. That's a great response. You don't need to reel it back. Like, you know, there's no perfect way to say stuff. You know, you're just like, the thoughts are coming and you're sharing them, and that's all we want. That's really all we want. So, but to push on that a little bit more, AP, about the empathy, how does that play out in policy and community?
Within policy and community, well, I'll take policy first. Policy can be seen by many as black and white. You ask for something, you want to get something done, it gets done. But there's a lot of gray area within policy, and I think that there's a lot of emotion within policy. If you're trying to sign in to law, having more than 800,000 DACA recipients become citizens, there's emotion in that. It's yeah. not just, 800,000 is not just a figure, like those are 800,000 people mm-hmm. who have added, who will be adding more than $14 million to this economy by the time that they're of age, by the time that they're 21. It's people that impact this country so positively. And it's a kind of policy, you know, when we're talking about DACA recipients, mm-hmm. it's a kind of policy that some people do see as black and white, which shouldn't be. There's no policy that is black and white.
Yeah.
There's no policy that doesn't hold emotion. And mm-hmm. you can't tell me otherwise. I think that depending on what side of the political spectrum you're on, mm-hmm. you can say, well, you can't go into policy emotional. It has to be just cut and dry. Well, if you go to it emotionless, then what are you doing it for?
Yeah.
You're in it to serve others. You're in elected office, or you're a public servant to serve others. And you, if you don't have any emotion going into it, then you're ultimately serving yourself. You're serving a re-election campaign. And that's not why you were voted in.
Yeah.
As much as fault as this country has, you know, you compare it to other countries like my homeland, like Mexico, mm-hmm. where right now we just went through one of the most violent elections in recent history, mm-hmm. where you had countless candidates and a lot of them women killed because of their beliefs and killed on their platforms. And these are people who put that emotion into policy mm-hmm. and had to suffer as a result. They died. They were killed by either cartel power, they were killed by the opposition. And I'm not saying this country is perfect. This country is far from perfect. But I also think that being patriotic about the U.S. is being able to say that there's a lot of messed up stuff here, and there's a lot of things that need to be fixed. Mm-hmm. You can't just say America's the greatest country in the world, because it isn't. Like, it's far from it. Mm-hmm. And I think that obviously we're far from Mexico, where you have politicians and women being killed for their beliefs. You have femicide. 8 women a day will experience femicide. You know, we are in a way far from that, but we also have so much when it comes to the statistics of how many women of color die in childbirth. You know, how many of them suffer from postpartum depression compared to women who aren't women of color. And through all of it, you have these policies that can change it, that can change these things that are happening to different people. And so when somebody tells me, like I say, you should do this emotionless, I'm like, no, you can't, because mm-hmm. it's real people. It's real people's lives at stake, people who are trusting you, and that's why they voted for you.
Yeah.
So don't stand there and tell me it's emotionless. Mm-hmm. Because if it was emotionless, it wouldn't have to do with people. Policy is about people.
Yeah.
And without people, you can't have policy. And without policy, you can't have people. So don't be here and telling me that they're not correlated. They're directly correlated wherever you go in the world. And it has its different risks wherever you go, but especially here, there's so much privilege in being able to say, well, it is black and white. It's like, no, it isn't. It is far from it. And I think we, as a collective society, need to stop saying that policy has nothing to do with people and that policy is just about passing it and getting done. It all comes from people. Because without people, there wouldn't be a democracy. Without people, there wouldn't be any of it. So I think I just get heated about it because we do see politicians who are much older, who come from backgrounds of privilege, saying, well, I'm just going to sign this, or I don't get why you're so upset about this. And I'm like, because it affects us. Mm-hmm. It affects people. How DACA is or wasn't signed into law or was signed into law, that affects 800,000 people who are adding millions of dollars to your economy. Mm-hmm. You can't send them back mm-hmm. because guess what? That's a brain drain. So that's a disadvantage to you as kids who already went through your public school system, which, oh, by the way, is tax funded mm-hmm. from the American people. And so when you have people say, well, I don't want to fund DACA, what do you mean you want to fund DACA? You don't want to make this country better? You're literally wasting your time. That's all to say. Empathy is important. Policy is people. People are policy. Don't want to hear it otherwise. Thank you for coming.
Wait. Everything you said, so powerful. And also just reminds me of an argument I've heard, or a description, and this is like an anecdotal description of law school, which is that it's about learning logic absent of emotion. Mm. Which, what? And for a period of time in my childhood, I considered going to law school because I can talk and get out of stuff and argue with my dad. That's really why. But I'm way too emotional for that. Like, what do you mean? I'm supposed to argue this and like remove all emotion from my words? That's absolutely not possible. And like, it isn't possible. So I don't know why we teach that.
Yeah. It's about having a healthy balance, right? You can't go into something completely emotional because you lack the absence of rationality, but you can't go into something 100% rational because you have the absence of emotion. So it's about finding that healthy balance and striking that. But that can be really difficult because if you're really passionate about a topic, so you could have guessed one of mine is DACA. Mm-hmm. If you're really passionate about it, then sometimes you can either glimpse over the facts, sometimes you can be hateful. And unfortunately, especially as women, we need to be mindful of how we communicate things, because the moment you start to sound a certain way, people will tune you out. And that's not me giving into a patriarchal structure. That's unfortunately just a fact that has been fed by a patriarchal structure. So being mindful of it, how do you work around it? How do you work with it? And as women, it's going to be a lot of extra work, and it is that extra work to have more facts, to be more concise. And it's not fair. It sucks, especially for women of color, mm-hmm. because then they have all this extra baggage put on by the patriarchy and by white men. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, how do you work with that? And how do you win? And how do you do the job? Which is why I respect people like Stacey Abrams so much, because mm-hmm. homegirl, you know, in her book, one of her older books, at the very beginning, she talks about how a few days before she conceded, she knew she was going to lose. Mm-hmm. And they tried working all around it. They tried to see, well, could we ask for a recount? Could we look into certain counties? Like, could we go ahead and sue Kemp? Like, what can we do? But at the end of the day, she knew that the biggest purpose of her time as a public servant wasn't winning, but it was making an impact. And just by running and getting that far, she knew she'd made an impact. But again, that doesn't mean it's fair. It sucks. Mm-hmm. But being a public servant at the end of the day is about that. It's about realizing it's not about you. You are putting your life to help people, but it's not about you. And I think if you go into it with that mentality of it's about you, it's about winning, it's about expanding your platforms, and not about what people want, mm-hmm. then I think you completely lose the message. And I think Stacey Abrams is a prime example of somebody who literally understood the assignment.
Yes, she understood the assignment. She still understands. Yes.
Dude, Stacey Abrams knew the assignment. Like, she knew at some point, she's like, she could have hypothetically stayed in for a really long time, asked for those recounts, which are incredibly expensive, mm-hmm. and she could have really done it, but she knew that getting that far, which is, again, it's bullshit, but getting that far in that race in Georgia mm-hmm. when it happened was a huge accomplishment. Mm-hmm. And she knew, and I think a lot of people, especially people of color, know that if it's not them, it's going to be the person that comes after them. And a frustration I think people of color have, and people who come from marginalized backgrounds, not to speak on behalf of all of them, because, again, I am white and there's a lot of privilege I hold in that. But from what I've seen in the conversations that I've had with people is that there's this recognition that if it's not you, it's going to be somebody that's next, but that you serve as a pathway. And that happens with women too. You see that you have people who have come before Kamala Harris, who have come before Ann Richards in Texas, who served as that stepping stone and served as that pathway of, I couldn't do it all the way, but I know you can do it next because of people like me who spent their time and energy trying to win a race that might have been impossible. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's, again, I go off on this, and it's just, it's so acutely frustrating to me. As a woman, to see so many brilliant people that second guess themselves, myself always second guessing myself, and knowing that we are so well versed, but it all comes from a patriarchal standpoint of this ingrainment of what can and can't be done. And it's not even from the people above, it's from people you know, it's the people around you, mm-hmm. who may or may not know they're giving into tendencies. And that includes voters. You have a lot of people who won't vote for a certain person just on the way that they dress, the way they look. And a conversation I have had with people is something as baseline as, will you have a nose piercing when you run? How is it going to affect your voters? Why is a straight white man Republican who owns an AR-15 from Killeen, Texas, going to vote for you, a flaming liberal with short hair and a nose piercing? Like, how is that going to happen? And it goes back to that frustration of, what does it mean to be another person in politics, especially as women?
Yeah.
And it's all these unfair standards. And I just hope that people start to vote more in the local city elections. That's all. From the bottom up, people need to vote more. That's all I have on that. I don't remember what the question was. That's where I'm at right now. I don't even know what you asked me.
Okay. I'm grateful that you are sharing your insights. And I hope the listeners received everything you said, because it's absolutely right. There are a lot of unfair stigmas, standards, projections that women are receiving that inhibit them from feeling like they can claim their power in office, claim their power individually. There's just a lot of, like you said, like, and that's not okay. But I'm glad that amidst all of it, AP, you still are still so fired up and motivated. And so I guess what I think would be really helpful to hear from the listener perspective, I hope, is how do you stay motivated through challenges? And what are some of the challenges you know you are struggling with outside of just trying to exist in the patriarchal society we are born into?
Reading. A lot of reading. A lot of going out of your own curriculum, outside of your own comfort, and just reading books about from women and books from non-binary folk, people who have influenced history, maybe haven't, you people that have something to say, because we all have something to say. It's about listening as well. So you can always pick up a book, or you can pick up the latest young adult novel, which I do. It's great. I love it. But at the same time, it's about being intentional about what we digest, whether that's on Twitter, whether that's on the internet, and what we watch, what we stream. Like, I'll give you an example. Something I didn't know until this past year is that on Spotify, every time that you stream somebody, it monetizes them. So for example, every time you stream a Chris Brown song, it monetizes it and it gives him money. I didn't know that until a friend of mine said, why would you listen to Chris Brown? And I was like, well, it pops up once in a while, it's not intentional. And he was like, well, you should look into it more and make sure that you're blocking his songs, because every time you listen to a song of his, he gets paid. Mm-hmm. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the history, this man beat up Rihanna. Mm-hmm. And this man recently had another allegation against him of domestic violence. So little things like that, that at the end of the day, is it going to put a dent in his wallet? No. I know Chris Brown has got his coins, but it gives me more peace of mind knowing that I'm consuming intentionally and consuming something that is good for my headspace, and it also promotes my own growth. Having said that, it can also be very difficult to consume a lot. And I think we saw that with COVID. There were times where I just had to delete my social media. I think a lot of people did, because you saw a lot of really sad news. It also goes back to that privilege, that my own privilege of, I was home. I had both of my parents, had my brother. Knock on wood, none of us got ill. We all got vaccinated already. And I had the privilege of saying, I'm going to turn off my social media, mm-hmm. and I'm going to put away my phone. And this is something that I can't consume right now. And obviously there are a lot of people who couldn't do that. They're living with this up front. You had our frontline workers, you have people that come from different communities who didn't have that privilege of being able to say, I'm going to put away my phone. No, it's right in front of them. You have family members who are passing. You have a parent who's going to work at the hospital. You have another that's, you know, that is getting deployed to a different office in the country to help fight COVID. But at the same time, it was also about having self-empathy. And I think that's the biggest thing, is being empathetic with yourself. Because if you're not empathetic with yourself, you can't be empathetic with others. Mm-hmm. And during COVID and during this very collective traumatic time, the biggest thing I carried and the biggest thing I learned, and I'm still learning it, is this self-empathy and recognizing that all of our situations are so different, but it's about taking a step back and not comparing. I learned in therapy that trauma is relative. Mourning is relative. You cannot compare your experience to somebody else's. Say that I go through a traumatic experience. I'll give an example. When I was younger, I was in a relationship that ended up being verbally abusive. And as I got older and I claimed that trauma, and I claimed that it was a trauma, I didn't want to use that word up front, mm-hmm. because I associated trauma with people I knew who had gone to actual war, people I knew who had been sexually assaulted, people that had gone through things that I put more as a, this is capital T trauma, mine is lowercase t trauma. Mm-hmm. And my therapist at the time said, you cannot do that, because that is to completely make trauma relative and to be make it comparable. Mm-hmm. And you can't. It's not, and that's the same thing with this experience with COVID and with being empathetic with yourself. You only have your own lived experience. You can perceive others, but you only know yourself because you live with yourself. And so in owning that and recognizing that you need to take care of yourself and stop comparing what's happening to you with what's happening to others, you find a certain peace in being able to recognize and to empathize what's happening with others, but to take inventory within yourself, recognizing that what you are going through is valid and the experience that you have are valid and what you feel is valid, even if it might not be on a greater scale like you picture it, or you say, well, X person experienced this thing and that's a lot greater than this and a lot more painful than this. Well, how do you know? Are you in that person's body? Do you feel what they're feeling? Do they feel what you're feeling? So big empathy. I'm a big capital E empathy gal. I am still working on being empathetic. I think this past year has made me in some aspects quite apathetic. My patience has dropped to an all-time low.
OMG.
Mostly with things that are like, you know, I don't know if it's patience that has dropped or my tolerance for bull has dropped. I don't know which one it is. But either way, I'm just like, there's some things that I'm just like, I won't deal with it. But having said that, empathy with self has grown. And I think that's one of the biggest things I can recommend people.
The relationship with yourself.
The biggest thing. Most important relationship.
Is there any like self-perception work you've also had to do?
Oh my God. Yep. Oh yeah. I've had to do a lot of self-perception work. And when I say a lot, I mean that I have started to recognize that I have issues with self-perception. A lot of people do. You know, we don't know what that means to like have an issue with our own self-perception or to have a distorted self-perception. We live with ourselves 24/7. So when we are in this constant cycle of how we perceive ourselves, we don't recognize that it's unhealthy, it's damaging, it's negating our needs, negating ourselves physically and spiritually. Like there's so much I could say about self-perception, but I'm not an expert. Like it's very much from my own experience. All of this is from my own experience. Caveat on everything I've said in the past 30 minutes. Yeah. Like maybe when I'm an expert one day, I'll come back and be like, Charlie, this one, expert on this one, good to go. But as a Capricorn, I will never be satisfied with being an expert.
She will never be satisfied.
Damn.
Sorry, I just love that. Okay.
That felt good. Perception. Okay. I have had to do a lot of work with self-perception, and that work has had to do with the simplest things, such as talking nicely to myself. It's something, it's so small, but it's so big. Mm-hmm. And I truly think I, as a human being, as a Capricorn, but also as the eldest daughter, as somebody who in some parts like had to navigate certain aspects of college by herself, is somebody who is a high achiever, somebody mm-hmm. who comes from an immigrant family. There is always this need to do more mm-hmm. and to overachieve. And when you don't do it or you fall short, you begin to see yourself as less. So an easy example is, why am I tired? I slept 8 hours last night. I haven't done anything today. I've just been sitting here working at this computer. I've eaten once, have not exercised. Why am I tired? I don't deserve to sleep. I don't deserve to nap. And that in your own self-perception can be really bad, because that to you is saying I am going to negate what my body needs mm-hmm. because I don't think I deserve it. And that is something really big that I am personally working on right now, is not needing to earn things that are given, not needing to earn my meals because I worked out a lot, not having to earn taking a nap. Like, if I'm tired, I'm going to take a nap. Like, right. I want to do that. Like, my body is tired.
20 minutes ago. Yeah.
You know, it's difficult because, again, we are all products of how we grew up. We're all products of our family, of our habits, our parents' habits, which is a big one, because those things are passed on to you. And so when you finally start to separate or try to separate yourself from the environment, it's hard. It's mm-hmm. jarring because mm-hmm. you're like, I am one with my environment. I'm a product of my environment. I'm a product of the people that raised me. And you're trying to nitpick maybe some things that aren't as healthy, some things that don't bring you as much joy. But just starting with little things like, I deserve to sleep. I deserve to eat this cookie. Or like, I don't. Like, I just want to have it. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, I haven't earned it. Like, I want to do it.
Yeah.
And just because you want to, that's all you need. And you don't need to earn it. Mm-hmm. Or like, I did 30 minutes on the Peloton, so I'm going to eat a cookie. Like,
no, I'm eating my cookies regardless. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, like, it's an easy example, but you can apply it to anything. Like, just do it. Like, you don't need a reason to do it. And self-perception's it sucks, because it's really eye-opening. And also, your behaviors and the positive and the negative ones, they stare you straight in the face. And it also forces you to recognize how you act with other people, how you treat them, how you treat yourself, how you, you know, consume information, and how you project it. So it can be very jarring and upsetting, but I'm a firm believer that in doing that, you get to a lot healthier place with yourself and with your relationships.
So, well, actually, not even so. First, I want to say, aw, because you're right. No, you're right. Seriously. It's hard. And the voices, like, first being able to recognize that your thoughts are not actually, you know, you don't have to take them at face value. You know, you can change them.
Yeah.
You can make them more positive. You can ignore the negative ones. So anyway, that's a really important detail to kind of to let listeners know, especially if those types of thoughts are keeping you from the spaces where you can stand firm in who you are and in your beliefs and, you know, advocate or be a servant to the things you really care about. Yeah, and that's just important. It makes me wonder, AP, like, what do you want listeners to take away from everything you've said today about stepping into their power, empowering themselves, being confident, and being affirmative of who they are? Like, what's the nugget that you want everyone to stick with?
Oh, the nugget. Biggest nugget I have is, and it's cheese, but I'm a huge believer that the biggest relationship you should invest in is the relationship with yourself.
Yeah.
And that can look different for many people. That can mean going on a run. That can mean drawing. That can mean journaling. I'm a huge journal advocate. It can mean setting aside a few minutes a day to write down what you're grateful for. It can mean stepping into your power in different ways. We all have different ways of stepping into our power. They don't always have to be public.
Yeah.
And some people do that public. Like, I know sometimes, you know, I will do things in a public manner because that gives me power. That brings me power. and it brings me joy. For some people, it's not that deep. Some people just want to hang out and listen to music and count stars. That's fine. Mm-hmm. Whatever makes you come on your power.
Yeah.
That's what it's about. And so that's the biggest thing. And I guess also on the aspect of, you know, politics,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's cheese, but but you're more capable than it's you're more capable than you think you are. There's a study out there that says that if you separate a room of men and women and you ask them, would you run for office? 64% of the women at that panel said no, even though they're far more qualified than the men.
Mm-hmm.
And the men, on the other hand, said they would say yes, but they were less qualified than the women. And so, you know, for those listening, if you identify as female, if you're femme, if you are non-binary, whatever you are, like, go do it. Go get active. Go run. Like, find a community. Biggest thing is find a community of people who are like you, who believe in the same thing that you believe in. That's why I told a friend the other day, I'm like, find a topic. I told one of my citizens at Girl State, I'm like, find something you're passionate about. For me, it's the streamlining of the naturalization process. For you, it could be, you know, where is my money going towards? What curriculum is taught in school? The electric grid at Texas. Like, find something. Find something and be active with it. And people will follow you. Like, if you are passionate, people will follow and people will be excited. And you don't have to be in a big, bad elected office to make a change. If you change one person's mind, if you get one person to go to a city council meeting, if you get one person to vote, if you educate somebody, that's a win.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the power of education and just speaking is huge. And we underestimate how powerful it can be to just speak to one person and say, can I take 5 minutes of your time? Can we talk about this that I'm really passionate about? And just do it. Because the biggest thing that happens is they say no, you move on. Next person. The worst thing that can happen is you don't do it. And then it's a lost cause. So just do it. Just get it done.
Get her done. Sorry. Oh my god. No, and a lot of what AP has said applies to more than politics. It's absolutely be passionate, do your thing. You believe in something, whether it's your creativity, whether it's your career goals, whether it's public service. People will follow regardless because the energy you bring to something will inspire someone. And so, yeah, I think that's a great nugget.
Nuggets. We love nuggets.
We do.
Love nuggets.
Dude, AP, thank you so much for bringing your wisdom, content, knowledge, experience to the show today. Oh my goodness. I hope that the listeners are super fired up given everything you said today. I mean, about being a woman in politics, about how policy is about people and how policy affects Black people. Yeah. No, sorry. Not just Black people.
Girl, I hear you. No, yeah. I saw you, the stream of consciousness kind of go, and I was like, she's going to let that one go.
We're letting that one go. But just about how policy is about people and how people are dealing with their disadvantages and their oppressive communities and the cards that have been handed to them in some cases. So just thought it was really important. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me, Charlie. And thank you to every listener ever for giving and receiving Charlie on this platform because she is the best.
Oh, thank you. Sorry, I had to swallow that. Thank you. I was about to say, okay.
Like, I saw the deflection coming. I saw it and I was like, Charlie, take it.
I know. I know, it's a life problem. Okay, AP, thank you so much. Listeners, say thank you so much. You can contact, follow, subscribe to AP. I will put her information in the description box. If any of this piqued your interest or is spurring any curiosity, definitely feel free to reach out to her. Otherwise, we'll see you next week. Thank you so much.
Bye, guys.
Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of Working Within. We're ecstatic that you made it this far. If you liked what you heard, we'd really appreciate your reviews and shares. And if you want to become a monthly supporter, you can click the link in our episode description as well. As always, stay connected with us through our Instagram, working.within, and our website, workingwithin.net. We hope to see you again soon.